Republican Richard Hanna is a freshman representative in the 24th Congressional District in New York State. It represents 11 counties stretching from the Utica area down through Cortland over to Auburn. And he joins us now. Let's start out with the payroll tax cut vote, which finally happened. And my question is, why do these things always seem to come down to the last minute and played out in public? And is that one of the reasons you think that Congress has such a low approval rating these days?
Oh, I think there are a great many reasons, but certainly that's one of them. This game of chicken that we played, I think, was entirely unnecessary and somewhat foolhardy, I believe, on the Republican Party's part. We were early saying that it was unlikely that we could get a better deal, although certainly the House package was a better package. When you have 39 Republican senators on board to have a two-month extension, it certainly didn't look like there was a better opportunity to improve the bill. I was early saying, take the two-month extension and let's move on and hopefully get a better opportunity in February or March.
Well, if I could play devil's advocate, this was not a surprise that this was going to end. Why couldn't it have all been figured out earlier anyway, so you wouldn't be coming down to, little extensions here and there?
That's a great question. I think that the Republican Party puts in these bills, and I think both sides are somewhat guilty of this, but I think it's our side this time, puts in poison pills and sends them across that are fairly obvious that aren't going to be accepted, and they pull these at the last moment and wonder why there's not enough time to fight these out, and then is surprised that they're not accepted. So I think that's part of the problem, that we offer deals that simply aren't going to be accepted and then look surprised when they're not.
Is this what you expected when you ran for Congress and won the seat this last year?
No, I tend to be optimistic. I always hope for better. But I've been there almost a year now, and as with the battle over the debt ceiling, which I was one of the very few that was early saying that the debt ceiling was going to be raised, needed to be raised, get what you could for it and move on. Certainly we can't go on raising our debt forever. Let's be honest, it's not just a matter of us raising our debt, but eventually somebody's going to decide not to loan us money. It's the same with this now. The payroll tax holiday is something that people wanted to extend. We wanted a year. The Senate came back and wanted to offer 2 months and then renegotiate. I clearly, a year is a longer view and offers more certainty. But there are other, and of course, the doctor fix thing, 2 years is a better thing. But I think they did not like the unemployment extension portion of it and wanted to talk about that. So I think that's a big piece of why I came back for 2 months, and they wanted to talk about it. I, as I said, would have accepted the 2 months. We weren't given that option. They, 39 senators, said that they wanted to talk about it. I think we should have taken that deal and just moved on and renegotiated it in February and March.
So how would you run things if you were Speaker?
I don't think that's likely to happen, but I think I would certainly try to have a better handle on the extremes of the party. As you noticed, we do have a number of members who seem intent on being less than reasonable. They do seem as though they're more intent on throwing bombs than they are governing and leading this country. We do have some extremes in the Republican Party that are less intent on negotiating and more intent on getting their own way at all costs. And I think that can be damaging. And incidentally, that's that way on from both parties. It's not just the Republicans, it's also the Democrats.
Well, many people say that the extremes can't find, can't be the ones that dictate where the country goes, I guess, at this point.
Well, and those people who say that are absolutely right.
Where do you fit in as a Republican in this particular Congress with all the Tea Party folks and the more conservative members of the party?
Not very well. I have one of the most independent records in Congress. I have voted numerous times with the best ideas, meaning I vote often with the Democratic side. Pleased to do that. I look for ideas. I look for solutions. I'm a practical guy. I've been in business all my life. I never got paid to not finish things. I get paid for what I complete. And I went to Congress to move this country forward, not help it stagnate. And to that end, we have one of the most productive offices in Congress. We've moved, my office has moved more bills through the House than any other. I had the privilege of being in the Oval Office this past week, having the first bill signed in the Oval Office by the president, and we were very productive. We've had 55,000 emails and letters returned to people. We have had 1,300 case files opened and closed. We've had dozens and dozens of meetings with people, businesses, and just been very, very productive. We've opened three new offices, and we've turned this into a constituent service-oriented office, and you know, just try to do the job as I think it needs to be done. And I'm a practical guy, and I see this as an opportunity to help people one at a time.
And your ideology, I don't know, kind of fits in with Sherwood Bollard, who was the congressman in your area a couple years ago. And seems.
Yeah, I mean, Sherry's my friend. I don't know that I'm exactly like Sherry. I tend to be more fiscally conservative than Sherry, but I agree that this is, for me, this is an opportunity to help my community to move forward. I think you have to be a good listener in this business. You have to be flexible. You have to be open-minded. And, you know, it isn't all about me, and it isn't all about carrying a particular ideology and pandering to the far right or the far left. It's about trying to find the best ideas and moving those ideas forward. And you can't do that if all you're willing to do is carry some rigid notion of what right and wrong is.
Looking at jobs, we're still having some problems here in Central New York and across the country, people without jobs, giving up looking. Where does the federal government fit into all this? Did the stimulus work, and where do we go from here?
I think, first of all, the stimulus bill, you know, sure, you throw money at the wall, some of it's going to stick. But my view of it is it was largely misspent. And right now we need to spend more money on infrastructure. And for the moment, there's an aggregate lack of demand. And that's the fundamental problem. Consumers are doing exactly what they should do. They're saving money. They're paying down their debt. They're trying to get their houses above water. But the fundamental problem is that government doesn't have the capacity to create jobs like it pretends it does. And even below that, even if we are able to create jobs over time, the basic problem is, what about the quality of jobs? If we get back to what's regarded as a normal unemployment rate of 4%, 5%, 6%, what about the type of jobs? We don't need more service-oriented jobs. We need value jobs that create value, jobs that provide a standard of living that are what Americans have grown to believe are good jobs, value-added jobs, jobs that are created through good high-quality education, STEM jobs, science, technology, engineering, and math. We need to remember that we live in a very competitive world, and that we need to have jobs that provide those basic tenets of an American life, a car, a house, an education, a car, you know, a dinner once a week, if you will, and all of those things that provide a decent standard of living. If all we're doing is making $10 to $15 an hour, we're not gonna provide people with the kind of standard of living that this country has grown to expect. So we need to not just provide jobs, but provide quality jobs, and that's done through education.
And does the federal government get in the way? Sometimes I've been to hearings where there's been suggestions that some of the regulations and whatnot do get in the way. And as a businessman, do you think that there's anything that the government could do to alleviate that?
Well, sure, regulations are always an issue. But I personally believe that we place a lot of emphasis on that in Congress, and I'm not sure that it's quite as big a problem as we pretend. Yeah, regulations are a problem. but they're a marginal problem. Taxes are a problem, but they're a marginal problem. Again, it's the aggregate lack of demand. Our economy needs to regrow itself. We need to get out there and compete. 95% of the world's population is outside of our borders. We need to remember that. We need to produce goods that are sold overseas. And again, it's about competing with the world at large. Those value-added products, we need to innovate. We need to create. We need to create products, again, that we can sell overseas. And frankly, we need to stamp a green card on everybody that comes to this country that gets educated here, and stop exporting the most valuable product that we have, and those are educated people in STEM, in science, technology, engineering, and math. But we need to realize that those people are assets, not liabilities.
When we move on to some of the issues that you've been dealing with, the Affordable Health Care for America Act, do you think that that's going to be repealed in the coming year?
I don't know if it will be or not. It certainly depends on how the next election turns out. I think there are a great many problems with it. I think that health care is the big elephant in the room, that if we don't deal with health care and find an affordable way to help people have health care, to provide health care to people in this country, we will never deal with the long-term debt of this country. And I, for one, am not capable of understanding what that means or how it's going to look, but there are a great many things that we need to do to tackle that issue over time. And if we don't, all the other things that we talk about, like cutting support for NPR, won't matter.
Talking about the debt a little more, where do you see this debate going? Is it something that we just have to get more money to pay for it, or do we have to cut programs? How can we make a dent in this debt?
Well, you know, there's a great question. One of the things we talk about in this country is not taxing people more. It's going to have to be part of the mix. I'm one of the few people on my side of the aisle that understands, I think, that, you know, eliminating any new taxes from the conversation is frankly a mistake. We are going to have to talk about that. It isn't going to fix anything. You could take every dollar from everybody and not make a difference in the long run. But it is going to have to be some part of the mix, and I'm open to that conversation. You know, I have to be honest about that. It will ultimately have to be part of the solution. Certainly nobody wants to tax anybody more, but we need to be honest with ourselves and admit that we need to be open to that part of the conversation.
Looking at the Middle East and the withdrawal of troops from Iraq and potentially Afghanistan next year, do you think that all these folks coming back, is that going to be a problem as far as getting jobs and things along those lines? And how do we get them to move seamlessly from the Department of Defense into a veteran's life?
Well, it's tough, isn't it? I mean, I think we have an enormous obligation to help these men and women transition to a normal life. And it's particularly difficult when we can't even provide jobs for people who are in this country. But I do think that our obligation to them is supreme, that we have to give them certain advantages in terms of education and job transition. And we have sponsors bills in Congress to help that happen. And I do believe that we have a special obligation to those men and women. So, you know, to that end, we have sponsored bills to help veterans. We have never missed an opportunity to help a veteran.
Just moving on to politics a little bit, last couple races in the 24th have been very, very close. Do you expect another close one this year?
You know what? I don't know. That's a bridge I'll have to cross when I get there. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, to tell you the truth. Redistricting is, I see a different permutation every week. And, you know, I guess I know this is a kind of almost pat thing to say, but I figure if I do my job, people will reelect me, and if I don't, they won't. I'm focused on the job, and I really do mean that. And I think that I've really tried to be constituent service oriented, and I've focused on good legislation down there, and I've run an absolutely nonpartisan office in Washington and offices up here, and you know, we'll see.
How would you like to see the 24th look? I know now you've got that kind of you kind of thing going, and I don't know if that is...
You know what I'd like to see happen? I'd like to see upstate New York grow in population. I'd like to see the state get its act together so people were coming back here so we didn't continually lose congressmen and women. And I'd like to see this place grow again so that the next time redistricting rolls around, we don't go from 29 to 27, but go from 27 to 30. We got to quit making this place the hardest place to make a living and have people come back, and indeed people want to be here again. It's a great place to live.